Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children Magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the World of Ink.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stories for Children show here at the World of Ink Network, a featured network here on Blog Talk Radio. We want to thank Blog Talk Radio for, of course, having us as one of their featured networks here and show page. It's been a while since I've been here. I'm your host, Virginia S. Grenier. I took pretty much the summer off to enjoy the sun and to actually get away on vacation. So I'm glad to be back. It's really exciting to be back. And Irene Roth will be back as well on this show and then taking over the Family Matters show here at the World of Ink Network starting in September, so in about a month. So we're excited about some of the changes. And then I just kind of quickly want to go over some of what's happening this week. Tomorrow, Marcia Casper Cook has her show, A Good Story is a Good Story. And that will be at 9 p.m. Eastern. She always has some really great shows, always has a bunch of fun guests on there. I do know she's going to have Phoenix Fire Publishing on the show, some authors from there to be talking about writing and just different information. So that will be a great show to tune into, especially if you want to get into writing or are new to writing. Lots of information on that show. And then it looks like I think that's all we have planned so far for this week. But as you know here, as we get back into school and into the fall season, the World of Ink Network always starts populating with a bunch of shows. So if you want to keep tabs on what we have going here, you can always follow us, of course, on blogtalkradio.com, World of Ink Network, or you can always go to worldofinknetwork.com. You can see all the different shows, learn about our hosts, our guests, and the different things we have going on. And then tonight, just so, not tonight, today, actually, I'm saying tonight, afternoon. Today I'm excited because we have a debut author on our show, which tends to be the norm on the Stories for Children show. We usually have the debut children's and young adult authors on here. And she's written a really cute picture book for kids. Her name is Leanna. Yeah, I got it right. Say Leanna. Leanna Kill. And she is published with Halo Publishing, who puts out really fun picture books for kids. They do other things, Christian-based books, nonfiction books, all different kinds of books. But they have some really fun picture books for kids. And she has joined the Halo Publishing team as a debut author with them, with her book, The Owl Who Couldn't Who, which is so cute. I've had a chance to read the book and got to see all the cute illustrations. So I'm definitely telling parents it's a book you want to check out for your kids, especially young readers who are beginning to read, because it's a really easy one for them to start learning to get those reading skills down. So we want to welcome you to the show, Leanna. It's great to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and then I want to kind of talk about a little bit about your background before we get into your book, because you know, that's the one thing when you're, especially when you're a debut author, everybody's like, well, who is this author? You know, who are they? You know, what's their background? Right. Who are they as a writer? So you have actually been interested in writing since you were a little girl.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of authors say that, but I mean, you really did. You started actually in the fourth grade with your love of writing and reading. So it wasn't even like high school or in college you discovered it. You discovered it at the elementary level, which is phenomenal.
I did.
I wish I could say if my kids were that way, because they're not. And you said you did a fourth grade project where you dressed up as an author. So I'd love for you to kind of talk about that a little bit, that career project that you did in the fourth grade.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I was in fourth grade, and the project was to choose a career that you could see yourself doing, and you had to create sort of like a collage of, you know, what you would write and things like that. And on the day where we had to present our project, you had to dress as an author. And I could remember, I can remember exactly what I wore that day. It was this really ugly brown suede long skirt with a button-up shirt. And I don't even know why I chose that outfit. But and it was really cool because, you know, in fourth grade, I had this dream of becoming an author. So I really enjoyed writing. I liked the creative aspect of it. My grandma still has a writing of, that I did in third grade writing, and it's really, really goofy, and I'm not sure that any third grader should have written what I wrote, but it's a cute thing to look at now in retrospect.
And that's great. And then you, of course, obviously you went through school, graduated, went off to college, and you ended up actually falling into the major of political science and English.
I did, yeah.
Which is interesting because here you are dreaming of being a writer and you fell into political science. And I actually have a senior this year in high school and he's on the debate team. And that's the major he's looking at, is to go into political science because his goal, of course, is to do the same thing you're thinking about, which is go to law school right afterwards. So that's why he's a major in political science. Or they end up going into politics and writing the speeches for all the politicians or becoming a politician themselves. So what made you change gears when you got into college to focus into political science? I mean, you still were doing the English thing, too, because you majored in both.
Right.
But why political science? I mean, what was the pull there that made you kind of maybe switch gears a little bit?
In high school, I was very involved with just in the news and political, you know, political debates and things like that, and I was on the mock trial team, which is a team that you argue both sides of a case. So my goal was to eventually become a lawyer. I remember typing a paper in sixth grade that I wanted to be a lawyer. So a lawyer and an author was my two choices I really wanted to be. When I studied abroad, I had the amazing opportunity to study abroad at Duquesne's campus in Italy. And it just kind of opened up my eyes to a different world and how I wanted to have children and in the lawyer, you know, being a lawyer as a woman, it's very hard to put your family first and to have a career and be good at what you do. So I kind of made the choice, you know, just a different choice, and I ended up going to get my master's in elementary education, which is where and why the book came about.
Right. And you are. I mean, right now, you that's what you do. You are a teacher, and you teach.
Mm-hmm.
Which grade level are you teaching right now?
This year, I will be teaching first grade.
Ah, so you're teaching those early readers.
Yes, I love
Very
it.
Very fun. Yeah, no, I mean, they're definitely little sponges at that age. I have a one that's going to be third grader this year, and she's not as much of a sponge as she was 2 years ago, that's for sure. More opinionated. So that's going to be fun. You get all the bright-eyed just out of kindergarten or, you know, homeschool kindergarten kids looking at you. That's going to be a fun thing. Well, I think it's great that your dream of writing came true, and, you know, now you're a published author, so you get to share that with your first grade class as well, you know, during story time. So that will be a fun thing for you. Well, let's talk about your book a little bit because your book, I'm sure everybody's going, okay, the owl who couldn't who, and they're probably thinking, oh, this is probably some like slapstick, rhymey, you know, just fun book. And it's actually a book about a little owl named Ollie who obviously can't who, but it's not that he just can't who. I mean, when I read the book, I saw many different themes that parents and teachers, you know, and educators should pick up on with this book because, you know, it's not just a fun, silly kind of story about an owl who makes a different sound when he hoos because my daughter has a speech impediment. She goes to speech therapy. She has a hard time, she's really bad with enunciating, and that's totally me because I tend to mutter when I'm not on the radio show. I'm very conscious about enunciating everything I say so I don't mutter on here because I do, and so I'm sure I'm part of her reason for having these issues. But, you know, he says things like where and when and why and what and other words. And so it's, to me, I see it kind of as a great book for kids who have speech problems, because when I was a kid, believe it or not, it was why I mutter, is I had a really hard time with my W's. And, of course, being an owl who can't who, he says all the other W words and not the who word. And so it's a great book that I saw for kids to be able to practice who have speech problems, some of those words that tend to be the difficult ones for those kids. But it also is about, of course, an owl, because he doesn't say who. He's not fitting in with everybody else that's
right,
an owl.
Exactly.
He's a little weird, because why aren't you saying who like we all do? So it talks about being different, as well as, you know, kind of an underlining thing, you know, having a speech problem to some degree, because he can't pronounce who. He just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you intended that. Maybe I'm the first one who's ever mentioned that to you, but that's one of the things I picked up from the book was, you know, besides the being different part was that. So what made you decide to write about a book, you know, that deals with being different and accepting one being different, having others, of course, accept you for being different, which brings in the whole being a bully aspect as well in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the inspiration behind that?
Well, actually, I wrote the book for one of my graduate classes, the children's literature class, and we studied all different kinds of authors and their illustrations and things like that. So our final project was for, we had to create and illustrate an original idea of the book. So it was, I am a procrastinator at heart. I think I do my best work whenever I'm under pressure and I need to get stuff done. So it was about a week out until the book was due. And I had no idea of what I was going to write, because it's really hard to find an original idea, because there's millions of books written. So I was really struggling with that aspect of finding an original idea. But it was really random. I was sitting in class one night, and I was kind of daydreaming because I was so frustrated with not having an idea yet. So I was daydreaming, and I looked up at this little owl. It was a tiny cutout of an owl, and the idea kind of just popped in my head, because I'm kind of weird in that I look at animals sometimes and I say, what if you took something away from them that was, you know, in every single other animal? And what would that make, like, how would that make them different? So, like, I look at cheetahs and I say, what if there's a cheetah without spots? So I'm kind of weird like that. And I look at this owl and I said, what if there was an owl who couldn't who? And what else could he do? So once I got that idea from this little tiny cutout owl hanging in the corner that looked like it was staring at me, I kind of ran with it, and I just sort of developed a plot. And, you know, being different is a major theme in a lot of stories. So I think that was just kind of a theme that came about because he couldn't who. So I don't necessarily think that I chose that theme, but I kind of think, you know, the theme might have chosen Ollie, if that makes
sense. No, it totally makes sense. Because, I mean, like I said, I mean, there's definitely other themes. I mean, he does have a speech problem. He tries, and he can't say who, no matter how much he tries to pronounce that word, he can't. He gets teased by other owls, so you have the whole bully issue, which schools, you know, are definitely constantly addressing. And then he also has a sister, which is, you know, obviously eventually, you know, Ollie does get to, he does learn to say who, but it takes a while for him to get there. And it's because his sister ends up getting lost, so it kind of goes back to the whole, you know, follow rules and do what you're told by your parents and listen.
Right.
So you have his little sister even has, like, her own little issues that tie into the story, which is more of a subplot to some degree as well in your story.
Yeah. Pippa's my favorite character. She's so confident and sassy, and I love how she gives Ollie the confidence to accept the fact that he can't who. So he doesn't end up whoing, but he ends up accepting the fact that, you know, his words that he does say, what, why, when, and where, are actually cool, and they're useful, too.
Yeah.
So I love the fact that she gives him that confidence. She's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, and I love the fact it's his little sister, not an older sister, because, you know, that's the one thing. Everybody always thinks that we have to look to somebody who's older than us, and sometimes we forget we can look to somebody who's the same age as us or even younger than us to draw, you know, strength from as well when we're kids. Let's talk about the bullying issue, because I know that's been such a hot topic. Gosh, I want to say for at least almost 2 years now. I know
absolutely.
For the last year and a half. And we've even had a few authors on who've written books dealing directly with the whole bully theme in children's literature. And it is a real issue. And the one thing, and this is, and I know I warned you that sometimes I play devil's advocate, and I've been thinking, and this is just something I've been thinking about, because I've just been listening, you know, because obviously we have elections, you know, not too far off in the future here in the United States. And I know a lot of, like right now we have our general elections for like the cities happening throughout the country. So there's definitely things like that going on. And it's made me kind of think about some of the different things, you know, just in my area in general, you know, things on the news worldwide that's happening. And it seems like the bully issue isn't just in schools. I mean, it's a worldwide problem. I mean, on every single level, from politics all the way down to, you know, preschool. So it's not it's not something, you know, as adults we're all foreign to. But what made me start thinking about it is because I'm a huge Marsha Cook and I are both huge. We watch a lot of movies, watch a lot of TV shows, and we read a lot of books because we really like looking at themes and breaking down characters and plot lines and stuff. We're really, really big on that. That's such a huge thing for us. And one thing I've noticed is a lot of things have focused so much on diversity, how diverse everybody is, which is, you know, exactly what your book's about.
Right.
What I wonder on the flip side, so instead of embracing diversity and everybody, you know, we just need to realize we're all different people and embrace each other and get along, I wonder if sometimes that also helps fuel, because we're so out to show. And trust me, I'm an individual. I know we want to be individual. We want to stand out. We want people to know that we're different, because that's what makes us unique and special.
Mm-hmm.
But because I think sometimes we don't focus enough on what is alike in all of us anymore. I wonder if that's helping to, because of that, if that's maybe been giving fuel to the fire for the whole bully problem. I mean, being an educator and an author who, you know, wrote a book about this, I'm just wondering, have you ever looked at on the flip side of that, if maybe we're actually putting fuel on the fire because we're so focused on diversity versus what we're alike?
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point. And it's funny because when I read this story to my second graders last year, that was one of the first things they picked up on. They're like, oh, no, he's being bullied. And they asked more about the bullies, more so than the actual plot at first. And so that really struck me as to, okay, my book, you know, the main theme isn't about bullying, but it definitely is, you know, that's an underlying theme. So I think that's very interesting that, you know, it is very prominent in schools and in the world and social media. I can see what you mean, and maybe that is right. I've never actually thought about that. That's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, it's something that just recently that I've, you know, and it's just, it's from watching, especially with like a lot of the summer shows coming to an end, a lot of the new movies, you know, through the summer that came out, summer blockbusters, and all the premieres starting up for the fall season, I started realizing, you know, everything's so focused on diversity. I'm going, wow, are we adding fuel to our own fire here? And so it just kind of made me start thinking. Then I knew your show was coming. I'm like, I should, you know, this would be a great topic to kind of talk about a little bit on the show, because I'm thinking, you know, maybe we need to, I love the fact we have books, like, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think we need to have this because it needs to make us aware of it. I'm thinking, you know, maybe what we should take about when we look at these books is the fact, you know, Ollie is an owl just like the rest of them. You know, he loves to fly just like the rest of them. And I'm not saying, you know, I mean, and you do that. I mean, you point, and that's why I'm bringing this up. In your book, you point out, even though he doesn't say who, and he does say where and when and why and what, you know, he thinks of also the things where he's like everybody else except for that part.
Right. And truly, I mean, that's the only thing that the bullies say to him. They have this chant wherever, you know, they say, who's the only owl in the village who can't who? Ollie, 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 that's who. And so that is the only thing that they focus on, because that is the only thing that is different that sets him apart. So, yeah, I see that is definitely an interesting point that I have never truly thought of. But, yeah, I'll keep that in mind, especially in my classroom, because, you know,
Now, Because I know with Ollie, you know, one of the things, too, is his sister, you know, he's trying to help teach her to fly because, you know, she's a little fledgling, and that's her big thing is, you know, she's trying to learn to fly and have the confidence for that. Are you thinking about writing additional stories with him and his sister? I mean, because there's so many learning opportunities between those two characters, and they're strong characters, because even though Ollie doesn't, you know, comes off at first as being insecure, he's actually, you know, his little sister's strength for the flying, and, you know, especially when she gets lost in the woods and stuff, and it's just like she's strengthened in him, and it's okay, and the fact that, you know, he says where, when, why, and what versus who, and their little owl, where they, I forget what the little owl groups are called, when they're all together. I know it's not a pod, but that's what it's called. Anyways, the
a
little group of owls. Yeah, there you go. Like, what are they called?
I had to think about that, too.
Yeah, it's not one we think about, because people always think of an owl by themselves, not in a group. But anyhow, so I'm just kind of wondering if you've thought about additional storylines with these two characters, especially because owls aren't characters, you know, animal characters that you see very often. I mean, it's not your typical, usually it's like rabbits and bunnies and aardvarks and, you know, bears.
Right. Right. No, I actually have. I would love to do a detective kind of series with them, and I have different ideas floating around in my head. But like I said, I have a problem with sitting down and actually getting it out on paper. Just because, you know, I mean, everyday busyness of life, you know, being a teacher and grading papers and that stuff is real. And this is just something I like to do on the side because of a class I had. So I think eventually I'll definitely get a second one out for sure. I just, like I said, I wanted to make it a detective series. I thought of two different aspects I could do. I could maybe even take a different animal and take something away from him and have him, you know, be different. But I think I like Ollie and Pip so much that I couldn't just leave them in the dust. So, yeah, definitely. In the future, I will.
Yeah. Now, are any of the characters in the book similar to yourself or anybody in your family? Because I know authors, usually when they create a character, draw inspiration from, of course, those around them, which I know terrifies my family to death. So is there anything that you identify with Ollie or a sister or any of the other characters within the story or that you see as being someone close to you?
I definitely think so. I think I have, like, you know, similar characteristics and personalities. Definitely with Pip, I think I'm kind of sassy in a sense. But I think, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to Ollie, and especially me growing up. You know, if you're different and it sticks out, people may make fun of you because you are different. So I think with Ollie and maybe just having those experiences when I was younger, I think maybe that made me more inclined to make it, you know, be more about him being made fun of and him being different. So maybe it was a subconscious choice to make that the theme.
Right.
Yeah,
no,
definitely with Ollie.
And you're right. Ollie is, I mean, they're both great characters, but Ollie is a very likable character because he seems pretty humble. and all that he does, too, you know. He's one of those kind of people that you'd want to be like your good friend because he is a humble type character. Now, I'm curious because, you know, picture books are probably, and I'm sure a lot of novelists will argue with me, but picture books, I think, are the hardest books to write. One, because you're very limited in how many words you can use. You're also limited in the types of words you can use based on your readership's age group. And you also don't want to put too much detail into what you're writing because you have to let the illustrator not feel restricted in the artwork. So what was that like for you?
I think I had just such a different experience because I think a lot of authors, you know, write because, you know, they come up with this wonderful idea and they write it down. I think I had a different experience because I had to come up with a wonderful idea and write it down. So I think just because I was forced to do it, it was a bit of a different experience. I had, you know, a great experience with writing this book. It was once I got that initial idea, the other ideas and characters kind of came easily. And especially when I would bounce my ideas off with my dad. My dad has been someone who has inspired me since I was little with writing. So I think we bounce ideas off of each other and get a creative sense and an idea of where we want to go with it. So I think I just had a different experience than other authors, and I'm very grateful for it because I didn't, you know, so much struggle with coming up with things. It just kind of happened and fell into place, and I had to make it happen within a week because the project was due. So it was a better experience than probably most authors, I would say.
Yeah. Well, and you're doing it because you mentioned how you're taking a course, so you're in basically like a classroom environment where, you know, and I've done stories in both because I've taken courses through the Institute of Children's Literature, and the stories I've written there, both short story and books, have been very different than when I've been out of a course or a workshop type setting and having to set my own desk by myself to sit down and write. One, you don't have. You have to make your own deadlines because you don't have deadlines in front of you. And you don't have somebody that you have to be accountable that's going to, you know, look at your work. I mean, you have to actually go find beta readers or a critique group or partner with, you know, other authors to look at your work. Right. So you're more in a lone situation, I guess.
Yeah.
So I have to say, I think my work's always been better when I've done it in a workshop environment. So when I usually have, like,
right.
books in progress that haven't been in a workshop environment, when I sign up for, like, a writer's retreat, I take those with me, so then they get forced into that for that reason.
Right. It's a lot easier whenever, you know, you're forced to do it and people are around you and inspiring you compared to by yourself. I don't know if that idea would have came to me if I was by myself and wouldn't have taken that class. I'm very grateful.
Are you taking any other, you know, classes or doing any conferences or anything like that?
Not right now. I'm not. I plan to in the future, but no, not right now. I'm just trying to establish my career and I'm getting married next summer, so that's exciting too. So I'm just trying to wait, you know, just until life happens, and then I'll take advantage of when I have more free time.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the upcoming marriage. That's definitely takes a lot of time. Been there 10 years ago. That's very overwhelming, I know. It's far enough away, but close enough still that I still remember all the plans.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. So what made you decide to take the book after you did this class? Because, I mean, I know there's a lot of different workshops and courses and programs out there that, you know, aspiring, you know, writers can sign up to do, and hopefully by the time you're done with the course, you know, the idea is to, most of them, anyways, the idea is to have a completed work or close to completed work of, you know, some sort, be a picture book to a completed novel. Mm-hmm. But I know a lot, after they do those, they stick them in the drawer, and it sits there or goes up on a bookshelf somewhere, and it sits there. They hide it away under their bed because they don't want anybody to ever read it because they're not sure if it's any good. What made you decide
right.
to not do that with yours?
Well, I shared a lot with my family, aunts, uncles, my grandma, grandpa, my immediate family. And so every time I would show it, they were in love with it. Every time they would give me so many compliments, and it was a huge ego boost, of course. But I didn't plan on doing anything with it, actually. I was going to wait until, you know, my life settled down more. But I decided, one day I just decided to submit it to a couple of companies and just kind of got lucky. I like I said, this experience has been a complete blessing because I really did just get lucky with the process and how they liked my book and the way they edited it and things like that. So they encouraged me and I did it. I went for it.
Well, that's good. And being a debut author, I mean, that's the scary part because, I mean, you are new. I want people to understand when I say debut author, I don't mean like completely new to writing because obviously you've studied English. I mean, you majored in it. You went and took a course for writing, so it's not like you just, you know, sat down. I'm going to use banker because my mom's a banker, so it's not that I'm just taking on bankers today, but it wasn't like you're just a bank teller or bank manager and decided, I'm going to write a book one day because I don't want to do this
right.
job anymore. and sit down and just start typing at your computer. I mean, this is something you were actually starting to hone and get training in anyhow. So what I mean as a debut author, getting to go with a publisher, I mean, it's scary because you, even though you've been learning about the industry and taking courses on it and studying it and looking at, you know, classic literature and contemporary literature and the differences and this and that, because I know they teach that as an English major, you know, the publishing side, they don't teach you. I mean, that's like completely foreign. It doesn't matter if you've been honing your talent or if you just sat down one day at your computer and decided to write a book. That's just, that's a whole other animal in itself, the publishing side of things. So it sounds like you were really blessed, because I've talked to other debut authors or even people who have had, you know, 5-10 books published, and you can hear some horror stories, you know, about how the publishing industry is. And trust me, I know, I'm in the industry, and there are more horror stories than positive stories about the way publishing works. So what do you think was probably working with, because I know Halo Publishing is who your publisher is. I mean, what is it that made working with them not a horror story? I mean, because that's one thing I know a lot of, especially people who are thinking about getting into writing or maybe have been writing and are trying to look for different publishers, or maybe they've been writing in one genre and want to jump into another. I mean, they love hearing from other authors what it is about the publisher that they're working with, especially when they hear, like, oh, it was great. It's been a great experience. What's made it a great experience for you?
Well, first of all, my aunt had published a book with Halo Publishing, and it's a religious children's book, and it's absolutely wonderful, too. But she had published one I want to say about a year ago, and so she had a great experience with Lisa. She's the one who runs Halo Publishing, and she's an absolutely amazing woman. She's done so much in her life. It's very inspiring. But so my aunt is kind of the one who got me into Halo Publishing, and once I met with Lisa and talked with her, I knew right away this was going to be a great relationship, because she just makes me feel very comfortable in the fact that, you know, she kind of takes care of you and guides you along the way and things like that. So I think Lisa being the runner of Halo Publishing, you know, I think that's a very important part as to why my experience has been so great.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that.
Yeah.
That you've had, you know, you, and I love the fact you said I've gotten to talk to her, because that's, I think that's key. Because I've talked to other authors, you know, who have agents or, you know, have, or are signed, you know, I don't want to say they're signed with a publisher, but tend to get accepted more, or their contracts run to where they have to send their next, like, 3-book, you know, ideas to them before anybody else can look at it, kind of contracts. So they're kind of blocking a little bit to that publisher. And they're like, everything's through email. I can't get them on the phone. It's all email based, and they don't. It sounds like, you know, it's more of a you have that more one-on-one personal kind of thing. And that's one thing Marsha and I have been talking about lately on our shows, is that if you can't get somebody on the phone or talk to an actual live human being, you may want to think about working with someone else, because I think that, and that's what I'm getting from you, is I think that makes all the difference in a positive experience versus a not positive experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I said, she would give me so much advice, like with my first book signing and things like that. So she was just absolutely wonderful.
No, that's great.
But I agree. I think, you know, person is the person who runs it. I think that's key to whether or not you have a great experience.
Yeah. No, that's good. Now, for people who are curious about, because, you know, things are changing. I know you're doing the virtual tour with us to the World of Ink Network. It sounds like you've gotten done a book, Sunny. As an author, what do you think is key for fans and for you as an author in connecting? Because that's and I know you're new. I mean, you are a debut author, but I'm sure, you know, Lisa's giving you some advice. I'm sure your aunt's giving you some advice, and she's published. I'm pretty sure you probably have checked out other authors and what they're doing. Because it seems like with the information world we're in, it's so hard sometimes to connect or to realize, oh, this is somebody I need to go find out about, or, you know, unless they become like the big buzzword of the day. It's, you know, there's just so much so much out there. So what do you think is probably key for readers and authors and trying to connect with each other and know each other's out there? Because I know there's a lot of, that's why we do these shows, there's a lot of readers out there
a lot of fans of, you know, children's literature. It doesn't have to be kids. I mean, there's parents and teachers and homeschoolers and librarians. That, you know, I love picture. I still read kids' books. I was reading kids' books before I even got into this, because I love children's literature. I'm always so happy.
Yeah.
It's more happy than the other stuff. A lot of the other stuff is more depressing.
Right.
If on the news for depressing, right? I even find for myself, I mean, that's one reason why I started when Marcia was looking for somebody to work with her at World of Ink and do radio shows and stuff. I was all over, so I was like, oh, this is a great way for me, at least, to connect, because I even find it sometimes hard to find authors like yourself before I was doing all of this, so I could, you know, increase my library of uplifting work.
Right.
So do you have any tips on what people can do? And
excuse me, sorry.
Okay.
I think, you know, I think social media is a big one that I'm on, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I do it a lot with my books through those sources. And I like those aspects because, you know, you're directly contacting the author themselves. So I think social media is, I mean, it does have its downsides, but I think it's absolutely, you know, wonderful with connecting to people that you wouldn't normally connect to. I've also been doing some local signings. So anytime there's, you know, the coffee shop, drop by and I'm there in person. So I think just, you know, being aware of what's around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I didn't even think about any of our coffee shops in my area. I always go to our bookstores.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
You're right. Authors do tend to hang out in Starbucks and Coffee Bean and some of the other coffee shops quite a bit. And as
me
you're
too.
Saying, I'm thinking, I remember we had an author out in Seattle, Jack Remick, and that's what they do. They get together once a week out there in Seattle at a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And
right. And there's a lot of signings that I've seen. Like, even Chick-fil-A does a book signing. So, I mean, just being aware of what's in your community, I think it's, you know, easier to connect to people that you wouldn't normally connect with.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, are you planning on doing any school visits? And I mean, obviously you're a teacher, so I know it's going to make it a little bit harder to do that, but are you planning on, when you can, getting out into schools and talking to students at other schools beyond your school?
Yeah, I would absolutely love to do that. But as a teacher, it is hard. Because, you know, we need a substitute and things like that. So it does get difficult being a teacher and wanting to expose my book to different schools, because I think that relationship that an author has with a child who has a children's book, an author who has a children's book, that relationship with a child, I think that's such a special one. And I especially, you know, children are my favorite people to be around because they are so inspiring and so innocent. So I think that's just very, you know, very inspiring. So I would love to, but the position that I'm in right now, I'm not so sure that I could. Maybe once I get tenure, that would be easier. But not right now.
Yeah.
I don't think I would. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I do know schools are starting, and it's something Marcia and I are looking for, looking for someone who can, who actually is behind it. But they're actually now having Skype with an author. So instead of, like,
that's
authors
cool.
actually physically being in schools, they can do
right.
it through Skype. And there's a couple of companies that do it. So we're trying to get a hold of the people who run it, you know, one of them, anyways, to come do a show with us. So, but you might want to check that out, because I thought that was a really great way, because there's so many, like, inner city schools that cannot afford, budget-wise, to bring an author in. And if, you know, especially like a new author like yourself, or, you know, or somebody who's with, like, you know, smaller publishers or medium-sized publishers, they just don't have that kind of a marketing budget to send authors, you know, at their cost to a school, you know, to donate that kind of a service to a school. So I thought that was a really neat thing. So that might be something you might be able to work out in the future.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing about my situation is that I didn't write this book, you know, to make money. I mean, it's nice if I make a couple of dollars and can pay my student loans, but I didn't write it to make money. So I think with that aspect, I've been a lot more giving, excuse me, a lot more giving with my book. For instance, we did a, I invited my dad, who is also an author. He published the book November, and his was a children's novel. So I invited my dad, and we did a kind of a charity event for a kid who was sick in my school, and the donation, we gave the proceeds to him. So I think with my situation, I feel very blessed in that I'm able to, you know, kind of be flexible with those things. So I'm very much looking forward to finding opportunities where I can do that. So just have to drop out of the sky into my lap.
And that's great that you did that with your book. We had an author out here in Southern Utah that recently did that. A child had a really, he was a high school student, had a really bad accident, and they weren't sure if he was going to be paralyzed. And he was in the hospital for months trying to recover. And a couple of authors, young adult authors, got together and did charity events and donated all their proceeds to help pay for the medical costs that were
It really is. Yeah, it's a great situation to be in. I mean, I feel very blessed to have done that.
And that's the one thing I've noticed from the children's and adult community is most authors, and I when I say most, I really do honestly mean like 96-97% of them say, I didn't get into this to make the money. I did because I love to write, because I want to touch children's lives, you know, and teens' lives.
Right.
And money is great, and I'm not going to say no to it, but that wasn't the main focus. So I that's
right.
Being a debut author, I'm letting you know you're coming at this, and I mean, and I've heard this even from like award-winning New York best-selling authors as well. And I'm going, yeah, you can just say that because you make a lot of money. But now I've heard it from the top end all the way down to like just starting out like you in the industry. And that's one reason why I do the Stories for Children show, because I find it to be the most charitable group in the in genre of authors out there.
Cool.
Compared to the other ones.
Cool.
Not that I'm knocking everybody else. Just saying that the children's and YA genre tends to be a really charitable group. But I think, you know, you have to be, because the focus is kids, you know.
Right. Exactly.
So I think that's great, and I think you're doing a fabulous thing, and I hope that you do write more books, because you have a great book. I want to quickly touch on the illustrations before our show comes to an end, but I love the illustrations. They're very detailed, but they're not like super bright in color. They're not very muted in color. I mean, they're just a very nice medium base, you know, color. And I'm not an illustrator, so all the artists can get mad at me later for like using totally wrong technique. I know it sounds horrible. My background's fashion. Here I am. I can't even talk about the mediums of artwork. But did Halo get your illustrator, or did they give you a list of illustrators for you to choose from? Did you find your illustrator? Because that's the other thing. I mean, not just aspiring writers like to know that are writing picture books, but even, you know, a lot of readers are always curious, like, how did the author and the illustrator get put together to come up with how it comes out, you know, how the illustrations come out? Because it really is taking two minds and trying to merge them into one, into a book. And
right.
That's also
right.
Not an easy process at all.
Right. Yeah. Actually, Halo Publishing, they give a list. They gave me a list of illustrators. And Amy Ratinger's work just stuck out to me. The way she could create an animal and make it, you know, cute, but at the same time look like it's real, sort of. So her work just stuck out to me. And it was, like I said, this entire experience has been, I couldn't have asked for a better experience, because the way we were able to bounce ideas off of each other, and the way I was able to, you know, say what I wanted, but also give her the freedom to make it her own as well. We just worked very, very well together. It was a great marriage. But it was so cool for me as an author who accidentally became an author. It was just so cool for me to see Ollie and Pip and the bullies come alive. So it was just it was a very cool process, and her work is absolutely gorgeous. It's actually, I sometimes tell people, I'm kind of humble in the fact, I guess, a little bit humble, in the fact that I tell people that, you know, my story's okay, but the illustrations are even better. So I really, really appreciate her work.
Yeah, and for our listeners, you can go to the main show page if you're only on our main page. You actually click on the link to go into the show page for Stories for Children, so Stories for Children Show Day. You can actually see the book cover on there and see the illustrations. It's just the color itself, it really does draw your eye. And that's the one thing I find with picture books. When I talk to book reviewers and bookstore owners, along with, you know, just readers of picture books, the one thing they always say is, you know, I don't look at the title, I don't look who the author is, it's the cover. And if the cover doesn't catch my eye, you know, then I don't go beyond that. Now, obviously, for the adult, you know, who's buying the book, they go beyond that after that, and they start looking at other things. But, you know, it's true, I think, because that's how kids shop, too. You know, they're very visual as young kids. So you have a great marriage with who your illustrator is, because it does pop, but it's not like super bright or so muted to where it blends perfectly with the overall feeling of the story and your style of writing. So I definitely think that you have a great marriage, because I'm a big one of always picking on the, and I know David Shannon's a great illustrator, and I know he's an award-winning New York best-selling author, but I hate his series, the No David series. I think character David is my little girls even told me, he's scary looking. They're
he's
that little boy, David, he's got those little sharp, scary monster teeth, and they don't like those books. And I'm like, and I've seen other things where David Shannon's been the illustrator. I'm going, what happened with your books? So sometimes I think maybe authors shouldn't illustrate their own work just for that reason, but that's just my opinion because of the David series. But, yeah, so I think you have a great marriage because, you know, sometimes stick, scary figure, monster teeth boys shouldn't be in other people's work. So, and now I'm on public radio saying that, and I'm probably going to get, like, a really nasty, like, lawsuit letter for it, but which you can email me at, if you guys are all upset about that, at vsgrunier@gmail.com. But, yeah, I'm not a fan of the David Shannon No David series for that reason, because I saw those books. I remember my daughter got that book as a gift, the very first one, and I just went, seriously, I didn't even read the story. The story's a great story, but I looked at the cover and went, that's going to give her nightmares. So I do. I think you got the right illustrator for you, because it enhances what you're doing versus detracting.
Exactly.
So great, very great job in picking an illustrator. One last question. What was it like when the book was finally done and you're holding the final printed version in your hand? Because, I mean, you think about that. You've worked on this thing, even though you were, like, dragging your heels in at the beginning during your course to actually come up with an idea. It's finally done. You've taken it from concept to a class assignment, you know, for a book that you had to do, to actually getting it published and going through that whole process. What did you feel like, you know, finally seeing it finished, the final completed work?
Oh, my goodness. It was an unbelievable feeling of accomplishment, especially because in fourth grade, like I said, I wanted to publish my own book. So that was a goal of mine since I was a young girl. But it was the feeling that it's hard to explain, and I know that sounds kind of cheesy and corny and cliche, but it is very hard to explain. It's just an overwhelming feeling of accomplishment and joy and kind of nervousness, because you don't know how other people would take it. So it was overwhelming with just all kinds of emotion. But definitely cool, because I was able to also compare them with my illustrated version, and having them sit side by side and taking that picture was awesome. It was very cool.
Yeah. No, that's great, because, you know, the one thing, you know, at least for me, and I know, you know, you're planning on getting married. I mean, I didn't start writing until after I had kids, and so I was thinking, you know, oh my gosh, I have these kids, and I walked away from my career so I could raise my children, and I'm like, what kind of legacy am I going to leave? Because, you know, you think that as a parent anyways, you know, what kind of legacy am I going to leave behind? And that's how I fell into writing, because I wanted to leave, even if nobody knew I even wrote something except for my own kids, I didn't care. It was the whole, I wanted to leave something that was physical behind. And I think writing gives us that, because even if people don't ever publish their work and take it to the level you have, I think it's important to journal
or to write thoughts and put it in a notebook somewhere, even if it never sees the light of day until you've gone and your family discovers it buried in the backyard. I think that's important because it's leaving a legacy and a piece of you behind that someone can look at and try and know who you were as a person.
So I think
you're on a great step, and it's something, you know, that I think you should keep doing, because I think you're a great writer. So I hope this isn't, you know, I hope eventually we can get you to sit down that chair and write some more of those ideas that you got going on.
eventually, yeah. I will.
Maybe we'll have to contact your father and your aunt, who are both authors, and say, just chain her down, make her write. I would hate to see this fight won and not write again. I mean, I understand you're busy and life happens, and that's for sure. But I hope you keep going forward with your dream, because the Owl Who Couldn't Who is such a cute book, and there's so many possibilities. Like you said, I mean, from using the characters already in the book to just that same concept with other animals as well.
Right.
You know, and you're right. It's hard to find an original idea. I always say there's no original idea anymore. There's just new original ways of saying it, retelling the same story.
Right.
So, but we do wish you luck, and I know that you are working with myself and Marcia and getting your virtual tour, which today is the kickoff for that. And unfortunately, our website blew up on us this weekend, so we're trying to get that fixed. But for our listeners, we're hoping the next couple hours that it'll be back up and running properly. But we'll have your author profile page up at theworldofinknetwork.com, so they'll be able to see the different places you'll be for your virtual tour, read more about your book there, see your cover, your author photo will be there, the links to Halo, which is where your book is for sale. Is there anywhere else that it's for sale besides the publisher's main bookstore website?
It is for sale on Barnes & Noble online and Amazon, of course. So.
And then do you have an author website that you have or a blog that people can, because I know you mentioned the social networks you're on, but is there any other links that people can follow you and get to know you more and find out about your book and any other thing that you have coming up eventually in the near future, we hope?
Yeah, and you know what? Unfortunately, right now there is not, but that is something that I definitely want to pursue, especially because I know how to do it. So it's something that I would definitely pursue.
Yeah, I know. We need more hours in the day, right? Don't you feel like that as a writer? You need more hours in the day?
Yes.
I've come to the conclusion writers need 36 hours a day so we can get some sleep in, because it seems like It's definitely a 24-hour job. I don't care what anybody says for you guys. It is a 24-hour job, because if you're not writing, you're thinking about it. If you're not thinking about it, you're talking about it. And everything else is like has to fit in there.
I agree. I'm always writing notes on my iPhone. That's where I keep all my good thoughts.
Well, it's been great having you on here, Leanna. I mean, and talking about your book. And again, when you do get your website up, let us know. We'll put it on the World of Ink Network website and let people know that you have one. But there will be an author page, like I said, everybody, at theworldofinknetwork.com. And then the tour schedule will be up soon as well. That was the part that was making everything go crazy for some reason. It wasn't liking the schedule getting posted. So we're trying to get that fixed. And of course, if you missed today's show, or you want to listen to the show again later, you can. It will be available in about an hour on the World of Ink Network at Blog Talk Radio as a podcast. So we hope that you'll share this with people who like picture books as well. We always invite everybody to do that. And we wish you much success, Leanna, with your book and the future books to come, and, of course, the new school year, because I'm sure that's only – do you guys start in August or do you guys start in September?
Yes, in the last week of August. So.
All right. Yeah, we start back to school Wednesday this week.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yes, so we're already starting. We're on like, well, we're in mountain time, so we're like in kind of, I guess we're on schedule with the farmer planning crop schedule.
Oh, okay.
For our school. Yeah. So we start really early. Okay. But we get out at on Memorial Day. So we get out in May.
Okay.
We get out early.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That is nice.
So,
well, thank you so much, Virginia. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, and good luck. And then just really quickly for our listeners, again, that may have tuned in toward the end of our show, the World of Ink Network, tomorrow we have Marcia Casper-Cook's show, A Good Story is a Good Story. She is going to have guests from Phoenix Fire Publishing on. They will be talking from everything from writing to probably tips and publishing and whatnot. Marcia Casper-Cook's show is always a very information-based show for those who are in the writing industry, aspiring to be in the industry, want to know more just because you're just an avid reader and like to know how things work behind the scenes. It's a great show for all that information. So that is tomorrow, August 13th, A Good Story is a Good Story at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And like I said, we'll have more shows coming up now that we're gearing back up with all the hosts returning from the summer here at the World of Ink Network, a featured show here at Blog Talk Radio. We thank you for coming, and we wish you all a great week and a happy back to school. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.